welcome to another edition of Shop Talk with Laura Holly from the Outrider podcast. Of course, I am Jason Quinn Malott, and just to remind you, I am technically on a bit of a hiatus during October, not putting out any new author conversations or interviews this month while I get some things together. My last week was horrible. We talk about that a little bit in the show here today. And we talk about a lot of other things. And there's some links to some writers and stuff in the show notes that you should go and check out. Things like the Lantern Journal, and then Laird Hunt's new novel, and a bunch of other stuff. Oh, Emily Mandel's new novel. And of course, like I said, we'll be back. I'll be back in November with some new interviews, I hope, getting those squared away and lined up, and the recordings taken care of. Yay! What else is going on? Well, that's about it. As always, Laura and I talk a little bit about what we're reading and what we're trying to work on, and, you know, basically commiserate, much like we used to do sitting around the apartment in graduate school, usually on our Friday nights in between beers and noodles and movies, because that's what we did every Friday night in graduate school, because we really couldn't afford to do much else. So we'd get some drinks, get some carryout from Noodles and Company there in Boulder, Colorado, and go rent some movies. Plop ourselves down for hours and hours and hours. That was how we spent our Fridays. Anyway, that was a little reminiscent of I don't even know what I'm talking about. That's how bad of a week I had. It was so punchy, so punchy. I spent 9 hours, nine to 10 hour days sitting in a class for work. Not even the stuff that I really, And I'm still recovering. My brain's still a little mush. Anyway, so that was probably why their conversation with Laura drifted. But it should be fun. She's always good for getting the focus going for me anyway. So let's get right to it. Here we go.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
How are you doing this week?
Oh, hanging in there. How are you doing?
Oh, it's been a long week. It's long.
Has it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you know, it hasn't been as bad as the last time we tried to talk, and I had to cancel because
the car
was broken down. But you know, it's been tough. It's just been long. I've been sitting in training classes all week.
Oh, that's right. You had team building last night,
or something like that. Yeah.
I love that crap.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not cut out for corporate America. But you got to do what you got to do, I guess.
Exactly.
Can't default on my student loans. That would be irresponsible.
Yeah. Be nice to do it, but.
So how about you? What's been going on?
Oh, just working.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Written anything?
Working. No.
Thinking about it?
Thinking about it, but nothing's coming.
Yeah. So what are you reading now?
Laird's book.
Oh, Never Home?
Yep. Still working through that. I've just been busy and tired, so I haven't read as much, read it as quickly as I wanted to.
Right. I haven't started. What do you think?
Oh, it's amazing. Actually, I think it's almost better than Kind One.
Really?
I think he's progressed. He's gotten better as he goes along. He's become, I wouldn't call it mainstream, but he's become more accessible since I've first started reading back in Europa.
Right.
And this one it's just, the voice is really good. It's consistent, it's strong, and it's just really interesting, too.
Excellent. Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of good things about it. It's been getting some brilliant reviews.
Oh, good. Yeah, it deserves it.
I'm putting it off.
Are you?
Yeah. Well, I've got Never Home on the list, and got Emily Mandel's Station 11, which, by the way, it made the long list for the National Book Award.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you posted that. That's really cool.
Yeah, so, you know, they'll announce the short list here soon, and then the finalists, and or that, I guess the short list will be the finalist, and then they'll pick a winner. So I'm hoping she progresses with that. I mean, that would be very cool. But what I am reading right now is a debut novel. I think you might like it.
Okay.
So I'm about 100 pages into it. It's called Good House. It's by Peyton Marshall.
Is Good House one word, two words?
One word, I believe. Okay. Let's take a look at the title page. Just, yeah, one word.
Okay. Peyton Marshall. P-A or P-E?
P-E-Y-T-O-N.
Okay, so like Peyton Manning.
Yes. But okay. She doesn't play football, I think.
No.
So yeah, it looks like it's going really well. And I really enjoy it so far. I'm getting to that one first because I'm thinking I might want to get her on the podcast.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, give it a shot. I have an in. I happen to know her husband.
Oh well, there you go. Well, that's a good in. Very nice.
So what else do you have on your reading list?
That's it right now.
Right now.
He's on my Nook, my little Barnes & Noble Nook. I finally got that powered up again, and because I wanted to get the book, so I just downloaded it. It was great. I was like, oh, this is really nice and easy. I'm such a fan of books, like being able to hold them and flip the pages. So I was kind of like, I want to do this. And I was like, oh, but this is instantaneous. This is really cool. So I might read a junk book afterwards.
Yeah.
One of my little fantasy novels.
You should get your hands on a physical copy. You know.
I know.
Do whatever you want. I don't care. As long as you're reading, that's the important thing, isn't it?
Hopefully you got some money from it.
Oh yeah, yeah, you did.
Okay, that's all matters.
No, I still have a pretty close relationship with Watermark, you know, being a regular, so I just order everything.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
And then I have a Kobo reader, and Kobo has an arrangement with the American Booksellers Association, which is the trade association for independent bookstores. So that's everybody except now Barnes and Noble.
Yeah,
because you know, with Borders being gone, there's only one giant chain, and all the rest are local independent bookstores.
Yep.
And Kobo has an arrangement with the indies. Where, you know, if you have a Kobo reader and you go to a bookstore that has the Kobo program, you can buy ebooks through your independent bookstore's website and they'll get a portion of the sales, just like, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, it's pretty good. So it's a way for those people that like electronic books but are, you know, not interested in giving their money to Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, can still buy ebooks and do that whole thing.
Yeah. I think my take on like Amazon and Barnes and Noble is this. When I lived in Missouri, there was a Walmart.
Right.
And every time I walked in there, it killed me just a little bit. I think I died a little bit every time I walked in.
Yeah.
Because it was just, we're talking rural Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
You can only imagine the people that were there. But that was all there was. There was a local grocery store.
Right.
And I went there once or twice. I'd go there for like, you know, canned goods or something if I had to. But even then, it was a little expensive. Their produce was awful. It was just terrible. Wow. I had to go to Walmart. And so it's almost like just the convenience of it being there was nice, but it was horrible. I hated it. And that's how I feel when I go to a big bookstore, too. It's like the convenience is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I know.
Like, yeah.
But there, and I understand there are parts of the country where there simply isn't an independent bookstore nearby. And you know,
yeah, I'm sure there's
not even a Barnes and Noble. All they've got is Amazon if they want books. Mm-hmm. You know, so I understand why people do it, but
I know.
You know, the Authors Guild is working to get the federal government to look into an antitrust suit against Amazon.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
wow.
You know,
well, they sell everything. I mean,
well,
my God.
It's not just that. It's about the book thing. I mean, because Amazon controls almost 90% of the ebook market.
Wow.
I mean, huge amount. And yet it was Apple that got brought down for price fixing. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, all Apple did was said, hey, here's how we run our, you know, our app store. If we're going to sell, if we're going to have books, we want to run it the same way. And, you know, there was some timing and some other things that I think led to the case going against Apple. But it's like, you know, the big booksellers have agreed on what they call agency model pricing, which is where the publishers set the price of the book.
Oh.
Right? And that's the way it works for print books that go to bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The publisher sets the price of a hardback.
Yep.
And they don't collude on that price. It's just kind of a generally accepted thing. And then they discount that book about 40% when they sell it to an independent bookstore.
Okay.
And then the bookstore sells it at the cover price, and it's that 40% margin that they use to run the bookstore, pay their employees.
Right.
You know, things like that. That's the standard practice, right? And basically what Apple, and where I guess Apple got in trouble, was that they got every, there was some letters and negotiations and stuff that were going on with, you know, between the publishers and Apple, you know, figuring out how the this agency model would work with the iBookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of, particularly the Authors Guild and a bunch of other people were like, this case should not go against Apple. It's not anything that's out of the ordinary in the book industry. The publishers set the price of the ebook.
Right.
And that's how the seller, in this case, Apple, through their iBookstore, would sell the book at that price that the publishers set it at. So in their attempt, Apple, in their attempt with the publishers to set up the standard agency model with ebooks, got in trouble with, you know, the antitrust laws or, you know, unfair business practices or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And the judge came down on them. And it's like, you know, where's the antitrust suit against Amazon, who's cornered the market and there's no competition? Amazon can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Price wise. It just so happens that what they're doing is they're doing what they call a loss leader model. So Amazon buys the book, the rights to the ebook from the publisher at whatever price the publisher sells it at.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of they're still doing an agency model with Amazon. You know, the publisher sets the price of the ebook, but what Amazon does is they cut the price below. They sell the book for less than what they bought it for.
Huh.
So they will buy an ebook from, you know, Random House at a at I think it's somewhere around that standard 40% to 50% discount. But then they will sell it at like 75% off the cover price. They'll take a wash on the ebooks because what they're doing is they're getting people to buy the Kindle.
Oh, so they're making money on the device.
And right, they're making money on the device and getting people locked into the device because the publishers, all of the publishers and Kobo, the Nook that Barnes & Noble has, the Sony e-reader, you know, pretty much any reader other than the Kindle, they all use Adobe's EPUB format. Kindle uses what they call the Kindle format, which is kind of like the Mobi Pocket, and they're the only ones that use that format. So you can't transfer a book that you buy directly from Random House. You can go to the Random House website and buy an ebook straight from Random House. but you can't put that on your Kindle and read it.
Right.
And you can't take anything from a Kindle and read it on your Nook or your iPad unless you've got the special app for it.
Yeah.
To read that particular program. Right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of... Yeah, it's kind of the way Amazon has it set up, and it's they're pricing books at a point that's devaluing the books. People are getting used to paying $10 for a book, and traditional publishers and small presses can't compete with that. They can't afford to sell books that cheaply because Amazon's creating this expectation that a book's only going to cost you $10.
Yeah. And
that's not true. I mean, you take in all of the, you know, the expense that goes into a book, you know, the editing, the proofreading, the design, you know, all this other stuff that goes into it. And a book's, you know, it's pretty standard that a paperback book in that case is going to cost you at least $15.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so that, you know, after they discount it to sell it to the bookstore, they can make enough money to pay the editor, the proofreader, the designer.
Exactly. Everybody's got to make a little bit on it.
Right.
Yeah.
And most importantly, the author.
Yeah. Well, that's, right. You know, the last thing I think of.
Yeah. Did I tell you about the trouble I got into a couple of months ago? Not trouble. It's not really trouble. When I wrote that big, long essay about why I will never self-publish.
Oh, I remember your essay, but I don't remember what happened.
Long, complicated story. Someone that I've known for a number of years I've recently ran back into via Facebook. Turns out he's a big champion of self-publishing.
Uh-huh.
Sent this to a couple of his fellow self-publishing champions. Now, of course, they're all science fiction writers.
Okay.
And some of these science fiction writers, they write a blog or something on some like PJ Media or something like that. It's some weird whatever. And they wrote this post excoriating me.
Oh my God.
For my big long thing. Well, the funny thing was, is that I read their post and they stopped reading after about the first quarter of my long essay.
Yeah.
They stopped reading when I was doing the math about what it would cost just for me to hire an editor to edit my manuscript and how that would affect my ability to self-publish because on an economic basis. They didn't read the rest of the article at all. They didn't read the rest of the essay at all, which is where I go in and I say, you know, this is how, you know, these are the things that would factor into my decision.
Right.
About not self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say anywhere in the article that you shouldn't self-publish, that other people should never self-publish, that self-publishing is a horrible, horrible, bad thing. I'm saying there are certain things you need to take into account. And for me, the first big question is always economics. In order for me to self-publish the way I would want to self-publish, I would have to hire an editor and a designer and a publicist, and I would have to pay for paper books because part of the audience that I want to reach is in independent bookstores.
Yeah.
Right? And I would want my book to be indistinguishable from a traditionally published book. And then I went on and I said that, you know, from a content standpoint, it wouldn't be feasible for me to self-publish either because it takes me 3 years to write a manuscript that I'm even comfortable with showing to someone, let alone publishing.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, those earning outliers in the self-publishing world, those people that do make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year self-publishing their own stuff, they have two things that they're doing. They're only doing ebooks, and they have the which I guess you'd call the annual model update, the serialized story.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a science fiction, a fantasy. They've got some type of genre series, and they come out with one or two books a year. Right.
And people follow it.
So
yep.
Right. And so they're following it. And this is just this rapid turnover, like series television.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't write that way. It takes me 3 years, you know. So we're talking about, you know, it might only. So first of all, from the economic standpoint, if I were going to self-publish, I would have to take out a loan to get a book published, because I don't have $3,000+ laying around. So I would have to take out a loan. And these guys, you know, tried to do some math along with me and said, well, you know, only have to sell X number of copies to make back this $3,000 investment. And I was like, that may be true, but if it takes me 3 years to write a book, there's usually about a 90 to 120 day window when a newly published book makes most of its money. And I've known this just from working in the bookstores. People just move on to something else real quick.
Yeah.
They're always looking for the new release or whatever. So I might make a whole bunch of money, might make enough money to pay back my loan right off the bat. But then when I get into the long tail, when the book's been out for 3, 4, 5 years, I'm not going to be making that much money. And so when I get ready to publish, self-publish a second book, I'm going to have to take out a loan again.
Exactly.
That's a ridiculous cycle.
Yeah.
To be on. And that doesn't make any sense as a self-publisher. You, as a self-published writer, it's kind of behooves you to be on that quick, rapid turnaround schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can take the money that you've earned and reinvest it. That's a simple business proposition. Yeah. You know, it's like, and if they'd read the whole rest of my article, they would have picked up on that.
Yeah.
But they just wanted to call me names for, you know, because I challenged or seemed to challenge their ideology about the miraculous earning potential of self-publishing.
Yeah. Well, you know, you always were good at ruffling feathers. That's good.
I think maybe, you know, 10 years ago, I would have gotten really angry and upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
I just ended up laughing. I thought it was the funniest damn thing I'd ever come across.
Yeah.
Because they were just so invested emotionally, it seemed, in defending the way that they think it's the best way to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, in my mind, maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, if you're turning out something that fast on an annual schedule, not only are you writing faster than I do, you're using a formula.
Yeah.
And
it might work for some people, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm not content with a formula. I don't want to write the same story with the same beats again and again and again and again.
Yeah, that gets boring.
Oh, fuck it. Fuck it. So what is it that you've been thinking of with the, I mean, what's on your mind writing wise since you haven't quite, have you put down the second word yet, or are you still just that one crossed out word?
Still one crossed out. Well, I have a first line. I have a first line.
Okay.
Okay. I got a first line. And the first line is, did you say that you were in The Hobbit?
Run with it. Come on.
Well, I know what the story's about.
Okay.
It's going to be, it'll be a fun one. It's not going to be crazy people like my normal shit. But basically this guy, he's living in Florida. He's working at Burger King. And one of his coworkers, a real good looking guy, kind of young, you know, whatever, makes some comment about The Hobbit, and he overhears it, and he's, you know, like, say you're in The Hobbit. And he said, no, actually I was supposed to be the Elf King. And so he's like, what? And so basically my narrator is a writer, quote unquote writer.
Right.
Who hasn't been writing in a long time. Kind of like me. And gets obsessed with this guy that says he was the Elf King. He's obsessed with the fact that this guy turned down the role of a lifetime.
Right, right.
And is now working at Burger King. And so he becomes obsessed with it. And he does all this research on the guy who did play the Elf King. His name is Lee Pace.
Right, right.
I looked at, because I got to do the research on him too. And so he finds out he is going to be appearing at a Comic-Con.
Oh, wow.
In Vegas.
Right.
So my narrator decides that there's only one solution to this problem. He's got to get the Elf King, who works at Burger King, to meet Lee Pace and just deal with his demons and whatever, so they go on a road trip to Comic-Con.
And I don't want you to write this. I want you to write this. Please write this.
I just can't get past the first line. I don't know what I'm doing with it. I don't know what I'm doing with it. I don't know the voice very well. I don't know.
Right.
You know, what I want to do.
Yeah. You're just out of practice. You're just out of practice.
I don't know if it's going to be short or long, or, you know, I can feel it being long and I don't want it to be long.
No, just, you're out of practice. Be patient.
Very out of practice. Oh my God.
That's why I want to talk to you on a regular basis. I want to put a fire underneath you, because I'm misreading your stuff.
Yeah, I miss writing too. I miss people reading it. I miss people reading it. You know, it's like, but this one is, it's just, when I heard this guy that I work with say that, this happened.
Right, right.
The guy I work with told me this, and when I heard that, I just got so excited, not because he was supposed to be the Elf King, but he's like, oh, what a cool story. You know, like, I can totally watch this. I was like, oh, that could be something fun with this thing.
Oh, God.
You know, make it totally bizarro.
Right, right.
And I still get excited when I think about it. I'm like, God, that'd be really funny. I think this really absurd. You know, like a really just total weird adventure story, which is kind of funny because The Hobbit is an adventure story.
Right.
So here's this narrator who hasn't done crap for years and is working at Burger King, has a humdrum life. He's going on an adventure.
Exactly.
You know?
Come on.
It's a Comic-Con. Like, you know, and those people are just so interesting at Comic-Con. Just, you know, the costumes and the personalities that are there. So it can make for an interesting, you know.
Don't they have a con like that in Denver?
They do.
Have
I went
gone?
To a Star Trek convention once.
Oh, yeah.
Which is similar to a Comic-Con, I guess, but I got to see Leonard Nimoy speak. That was pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, I'm a Spock fan, so.
Right, right.
But, yeah, they have, you know, there's Comic-Cons all over the country, maybe even the world. I don't know, probably just this country. But this one's going to be in Vegas, because this makes it kind of fun to get to go on a road trip.
Right.
But this guy, he's like, you know, wants to write a great story, but he just can't seem to put anything together, can't seem to figure it out. And he's got a great story right in front of him, and he's completely ignoring it because he's just more concerned about this guy redeeming his acting career. Why did you give up on your dream? You had this role of a lifetime. Are you crazy? And here's this guy who is doing the same thing.
There you go.
Yeah. So I can just figure out how I'm going to piece it together.
Right, right. Yeah,
all I know for sure is that there's like that the narrator is going to be kind of androgynous. I haven't decided, you know, if it's because I want him to almost have a crush on the Elf King, but not really. Uh-huh. Have it be kind of weird, like a, you know, weird thing.
Right.
But
well, it sounds like you're okay. Two things. One, you're out of practice. We've admitted that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Two, what I hear from you.
Uh-huh.
Is despite the fact that you're out of practice, whether you know it or not, whether it feels like it to you, whether you're doing it or not, you're falling back onto, and this is a good thing, you're falling back onto what you always did well, as far as the pre-writing preliminary stuff went. You're ironing out and you're dwelling on those components.
Yeah.
That was one of the things you always did well. And it's one of the things that I always admired most was your capacity to build a story in your head.
That's where they exist. I mean, I always thought my brain is like a cement mixer.
Right.
Which is why I hate revising, because once it comes out, it's concrete and I can't do anything with it unless I completely destroy it with a jackhammer.
Yeah. Who was that? Who was the writer that we met? It was the second summer. That does the same thing. the Chinese American writer, the short story writer.
Oh crap!
What was her name?
I don't remember, but I kind of remember, but I don't.
Oh crap!
No idea.
If we weren't recording, I'd go in the closet and I'd pull out, because I still have, do you still have your notebooks from the summer writing programs stashed somewhere?
I believe so, yeah. I think there was all that stuff my dad found.
Yeah, because I've got them. I've still got mine in a box in my closet over here.
Yeah.
I could pull it out. We could find out who it is. What was her name?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
It had a P in it.
We could Google it at some point.
What was her name? I remember just her talking about that, and then that one seminar where she did the same thing. She would hold a story in her head and work it and revise it and do whatever, and then would plop herself down.
And just spit it out.
Yeah.
Well, what I did when I was a kid, I had a little dog named Missy, and she was a little mutt, ugly dog. And I used to walk her.
Right.
And I was so embarrassed to walk this dog as a teenager. I was like, this was like when I was 12, 13. But I'd walk her for miles. And what I would do the whole time I was walking is I'd talk to myself.
Right.
Now, when cars would drive by, I'd stop talking. But when nobody was around, I'd start talking again. And I would tell myself stories. I would build stories the whole time I was walking the dog. I was really into vampires.
Right.
Like Anne Rice and that kind of stuff. That's when the first Anne Rice books were really good. I read Interview with the Vampire like 3 times. I mean, I love that stuff. This is before they all glittered and, sparkled and shit.
Right, right. But, before they became non-vampires and just,
before they became whatever the hell they are.
Immortal sparkling cannibals or something. I don't know what the hell she's...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the other funny thing is that total sidetrack. Wait a minute.
Huh?
You can, if you read the comments on that post that I put up about why I will never self-publish, the dude that ratted me out to the ranty sci-fi self-publishers made a comment that, just not only did he, rat me out to these guys, but decided to try and take me down a peg, it sounds like you're only worried about prestige and your stuff never was going to, and Stephanie Meyer will last longer than you will. I was like, I'm glad you can see that far into the future, and determine who's going to be worthwhile, to future audiences.
Oh, yeah. Good God. Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, and tried to say, it sounds like, you're not that interested in earning money. It's like, one of the things that got beaten out of us in graduate school was, acknowledge the fact that you're probably never going to make money.
Yeah. Yep.
And so if you really want to be a writer, you need to throw off this whole idea. If you want to be the kind of writer that you are pretending to be in graduate school, you've got to get rid of this desire to make a whole shitload of money. And just follow that unique vision, that unique artistic vision. And, that whether you survive or not with that is not up to you. And you need to let go of that as well. You need to take, it was a nice thing about being at a Buddhist school. Not only did they tell you you'd have to let go, you could go and meditate and learn how to do it.
Yeah, which is nice.
Right?
Full service.
Stephanie Meyer and the sparkly vampires. So you were big obsessed with vampires. You would go on your walks and imagine your vampire stories.
I had a trilogy of vampire stories. I probably could have beat Stephanie Meyer to the punch if I just written this fucking thing down. It was really good.
Right. And if you made them really sparkle cool and look like Robert Patterson.
Maybe not. But I mean, if I had actually written this shit down, it would have been young adult because I was a young adult.
Right.
I probably could have... God knows where I'd be by now. No, just kidding. But I thought it was good. I thought it was a good storyline. It was like a trilogy of stories, about these vampires. And I had this great storyline, but I would just do this for hours. And I would and I wrote a little bit down, but most of it just stayed in my head.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because it doesn't do any good in my head.
Was it Wong Ping or?
Yes.
It... Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's her name.
I think that was her name. Let me double check. Let's do a Google search on the other computer here. Yeah.
And while you're looking for that, did you get to off track again? Did you get a chance to read Gavin's new work?
On the website?
Yeah.
I have it in my reading list online. I'm because I spend all day looking at bloody fucking documents online.
Oh, it's hard. Kind of,
you know, and then having spent an hour in the morning looking at my own thing.
Yeah.
I've got like 40 emails in my inbox that are from me, with links to articles that I want to read that I see on Facebook. Cause at work every now and then, just to quit looking at one computer screen, I like an idiot, go look at my phone, like another, I can't fuck. I wonder if this is part of the reason I'm having so many problems with focus.
Yeah.
Too many damn screens. I need to find a way to reduce that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, so I'll see someone will reference an article on Facebook or on Twitter or whatever, and I think I don't have time to read it now. Send the link to my email or put it in my reading list. And I've got so much stuff backed up online. You know, and kind of the last thing I do when I get home after 8 hours of, well, 9 hours if you take the writing in the morning, and the last thing I want to do is stare at another computer screen.
Oh, for sure.
You know, so I'll watch a little TV, I'll read a book, you know, just anything to not sit in front of a computer for a while.
Yeah. I gotcha.
You know, but during the day at work, you know, it's my computer, work, 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 work. I'm tired of looking at a Word document. Go look at my Facebook page on my phone. Work, 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 work. Go look at that. Oh, save that, save that. And then I get home, it's like, oh, I don't want to do it anymore.
Well, you can save it as a PDF and print it.
No shit. And I can, I, you know, considering I just spent money on a monochrome printer, you know, so that I could quit.
Yeah, print it out. Know,
so I could quit using my photo printer. My Kodak printer for everything, which burns ink if you're going to just print manuscripts. So I've got a nice...
Yeah.
There we go. I'm all set. Fuck it.
Well, I thought you got to read it.
Okay.
Because, well, a couple of reasons. One is just the whole thing's amazing. But he took, but I don't know if you read the Facebook post he put about it. He had a little shout-out to me. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes, I did. I did. I was aware of that. That's one of
and
the...
And I was... Yeah, I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Yeah, wonder why.
Right, right. No, I think...
It was cool.
Yeah. No, I think I have... somewhere in my list of emails, I have a link to the first... Because it was a series of stuff he did, right?
Yeah, it's like a collaboration with Derek.
Right. And I think I have a link to the first one that he posted. And then when I saw him make that reference to you, I sent a link again. So I've got links to the beginning and the end of the series in my email. I just haven't gotten around to them.
Yeah, it's because I'm a loser. Why you should look at it. The last story is called Holly.
Oh, not like no my shit. Name. All right.
And I'll just spell it what it's about. Basically, it's like, you know, it's notes from the coming war, so it's all these war referencing things.
Uh-huh.
It's these, the narrator is like taking prisoners, daughters. He says that he calls them the daughters from being wherever he's taking the prisoners from. And they have a torture device where they pull their teeth.
No way!
He did. He stole my story, which is not he really, but he stole from me. But
he didn't steal it. He paid an homage to it.
I'm like, no, he didn't steal anything. But yeah, he remembered the story that I wrote and borrowed from it, the idea of pulling somebody's teeth, and he did a much better job. I mean, obviously they're two separate, they're very different storylines, but
right.
But it was very cool. It was, I mean,
okay.
Obviously
so
it was really good, but
I popped open my Mac journal, making and decided I'm going to start making notes of our conversation here so that I can provide links in the show notes. Because I have a bad habit of not doing that. So that means I have to get it read, because I'm going to have to go look at it to put the links on the show notes so that other people can go read it.
Yeah, I think everybody should read it.
All right, cool. Read the whole series, but yeah. All right, you got me hooked. I guess I'm going to be staring at a computer screen a lot this weekend.
It's very short. It's very short. It's not, the whole thing isn't very long, so. It'll take 20 minutes. Yeah, it was great.
I love telling people about that story of yours, though. I love the look on their face when I go, yeah, this is the story about this girl who locks herself in an apartment and starts pulling out her own teeth. And then I pause and look up and they're like, huh? And sends them to her ex-boyfriends. And they're like, what? And it's just this kind of shocked horror that
normal.
Comes over their face. And they're like going, and you know the person that wrote this? Go, yeah, she's twisted, man.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I wish it were easier to get a hold of that Madness 2 issue from San Diego State.
Oh, but they don't even, good luck.
I have it. I have it.
Yeah.
I have it on my shelf.
I think I want one or two copies somewhere, but.
But I can't loan that out to anybody because I'm afraid I'll never get it back.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I pulled it up on my computer the other day, just kind of looking through some of my stuff, and I read it and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It was so just, I guess because it was just so direct and just plain.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I did. There was no drama to it. Because when I first originally wrote it, I remember Chris Baer saying, you know, what's the motivation? You know, so I originally put in like these little flashbacks to her father. You know, she had issues with her father. And I finally, I think in the final, I pulled it. I think I did. Or I pulled it at some point. I pulled the father references out. So I'm like, that's just stupid. Well, why does she need motivation? She's just doing it. That's her, you know.
Right.
Sometimes people don't need motivation to do something. They just snap and they do shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like at work the other night, we had a girl, somebody, long story short, she got very upset.
Uh-huh.
And teenage girl, cut her, suicidal.
Ooh.
And she just went nuts. And I guess she'd been raped a few weeks before she came to us. By close friends, and she's got some problems.
Right.
Something really small made her just snap, and she just went ballistic.
Huh.
I mean, totally ballistic.
Right.
And ended up punching a window.
And sounds like something I did.
I'm like, what the hell? You know, I was like trying to figure out what the hell was causing this. You know, she'll say, and it could have been, it was something very simple that started it off. It was somebody threw a pillow,
right,
a couch pillow, over the wall that divides the boy's side from the girl's side. Somebody threw a pillow over the wall.
Huh.
And she just snapped. And so right. I'm like, well, do I really need to go into her motivation for snapping? No. I have to deal with her snapping. You know?
Right.
So that's kind of how I viewed that story too, I guess. Because why do you need motivation? Sometimes things just are.
True. True. No. Yeah. Have you ever? You were a big fan of MASH, the TV show, right?
Oh, I love MASH.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever read the novel?
No.
The original Richard Hooker novel?
I never read it. Okay. I'm gonna have to read it.
Yeah, I Well, you know, I was never a big fan of the TV show. This is a fun segue, by the way. I have no idea. I mean, other than you're talking about a hospital-like situation, let's go to MASH for minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I was never a big fan of the TV show, but I love the movie.
Oh, the movie's really good, too. Yeah. Right?
And so I finally decided, fuck it, I'll pick up the book. See how it all got started.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strangely written book. I mean, not just in the style.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't quite gotten my brain around how what the quirk is. One side of me wants to say, well, it's kind of immature and juvenile, but then I think about the movie and I think
it's kind of what it was, yeah.
And
the show was like that too.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, these drafted doctors that didn't want to be there. So yeah, of course they went a little immature and juvenile.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I love that movie.
Yeah. Well, the TV show, and if you weren't a fan, has one of the best ending episodes ever.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
It was fantastic. But, yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. I don't know what I was going to do with having read, the book, other than just out of sheer curiosity.
Right.
Have you heard about or picked up Eleni Sikleanos' new book, You Animal Machine?
Oh, I didn't know she had a new one out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's on Coffee House.
Okay, figured.
Pretty easy to find. I've got a copy down here. And that, along with some of the stuff that Brian Evanson recommended and Laird recommended, is stuff I need to get read, I think, before I can progress on. I think that's the big puzzle book, the one that's kind of about my dad. And this is, going back to, what I talked about before with the distraction thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put up some corkboard in my office to kind of do what you had recommended, as far as, trying to plot out the whole FAR 19, the Tulsa story thing.
Yeah.
And then we'd talked again about what I was going to have to do is make the city a character.
Right.
Well, aside from Italo Calvino's Invisible Cities, which I think I might be useful, I need to go back and reread that. But I'm having, and I'd popped up something kind of online about it, trying to find some stories where the writer actually makes an inanimate object or a city or something like that a narrating voice.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know of anything along those lines?
I'm probably totally wrong because it's been years since I read this. In the Skin of a Lion, Toronto? Did he do that with Toronto?
No. There was...
No?
Yeah, because, no, there was the bridge builder who saved the nun, but then everything kind of either filtered through Patrick.
Okay. That's been so long since I read it, so I couldn't remember.
Yeah, the early part where the bridge builder rescues the nun, yeah, there is kind of a distance where he talks about how the bridge was built and kind of a broad scope thing, but it's not focalized through the city itself.
Mm-hmm.
There is an observer. Commenting on the city.
Okay.
Specifically commenting on the construction of it, but it's interesting because I feel like I need to find something to kind of give me an example or a solution that I haven't been able to figure out for the Tulsa book, something to do that. I'm still looking for solutions for the Minotaur book, the one about my dad, which is called A Lost Thread. And then we have my big heartbreak story. which I don't know why I stalled on that one again. And a little while before we started, well, before we were supposed to talk the last time, and then the car blew up.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I was going to have to do that in first person, and then that didn't wasn't working out. And I kind of put that aside because I think I need to think about it some more. So you know what I did?
Huh.
I went, do you remember the kitchen sink story I was working on back when we were rooming together in Boulder? The conspiracy theory thing?
Yes.
Right? I've dragged that beast out again. Right? And that's what I've been working on the last 2.5 weeks.
All right.
Right now I'm just rereading everything and kind of making minor little revisions and tweaks as I go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've collapsed a few sections and stuff like that. And one, I feel like I'm intensely distracted all the time. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
It can't be just the screen thing, the phone and the computers and whatnot, because, mm-hmm. you know, I had the internet and the computer and all that stuff and online access when we were rooming together and in graduate school.
Yeah.
Particularly that last year. And I wrote 1, 2. Yeah, I wrote 2 novels and then 70,000 words on the kitchen sink book.
Well,
you know, so
there's a difference. There was one big thing or a couple big things that weren't there.
What's that?
The internet was not as instantaneous. I mean, it was there. It was still, you know, slow at times.
Right, right.
And social media.
Right. Right, right.
Because I catch myself looking at my phone all the time for like Facebook or something like that. Oh, what's everybody doing?
Right.
You know, that wasn't there.
Do we need to kill Facebook? Do I need to kill Facebook? Fuck it. I've been thinking about it.
Maybe take a break from it. Take a hiatus.
Yeah. But it's on my phone. I mean, I can delete the app, but I can download it again just as quickly. You know, that's the first sign of a junkie. That's the first sign of a junkie, isn't it?
Time. Yeah.
I need to like go back to being having a dumb phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how other writers do it. I don't know. I think that's part of the thing that's I don't know. I mean, do you feel like it's been distractions in particular that pulled you away from it?
Totally.
Or was it other things combined with it?
Mostly distractions, I think. I just let myself not think about what I wanted to get done.
Right, right.
I would think about other stuff. Oh, I gotta do this instead, or I'll do this. Or I wanna look at this instead. Or I don't feel like working on this right now, or looking at this, I don't want to deal with this. I'll do something else.
Yeah.
At least that's what keeps me from it now.
Right, right. Do you think that quest for the distraction or that capacity of like that procrastination combined with your natural work habit? You know, 'cause you're not a clock puncher like me.
No.
Right. Do you think that has made it worse for you?
Mm.
Or do you still have, I mean, are you still generating all those stories in your head? You just haven't been writing them.
No, they're not there. Mm. It's almost like I had a radio tuned
right
to a really cool station for a while. And then I drove out of range and it went to static. And I just turned off the radio.
Right, right, right.
That's kind of how it feels. What started, I don't know. I wouldn't, you know, I don't know if it was distractions originally. cause from. I think just not having any kind of routine made a difference.
Right.
You know, not sticking with something, waiting for the story to come. It's been a long time since I actually had a real story idea that I felt had any kind of legs.
Right, right.
Long time.
Huh.
I don't know. I get it's like I don't know what it is. I mean,
do you think if you'd been around writers more in the last few years, it would have helped?
I don't know. Maybe.
Because that's been my thinking is that, you know, that even though I've had that clock punching discipline, you know, when I that it's kept the routine in place.
Yeah.
But because I haven't had the set of connections, haven't had the community, there hasn't been that. Well, there hasn't been that oppositional magic, you know, that Jack Spicer used to talk about, you know, that kind of competition and confrontation, that that challenge, you know, like, oh, you think that's good? I don't think so. Show me good. Come on, you know.
Yeah.
and that's not something that's generated out of, you know, animosity and hatred and dislike. That's like, you know, I want to be around good writers. And so I'm going to push you to be better. Because if you are better, I'm going to have to be better to keep up with it.
So right.
You know, that's kind of where I felt like we didn't, I think that was the difference in the concept of competition that we had in our class in graduate school. Well, in graduate school, at Naropa in particular, as opposed to, you know, the kind of more predatory aggressive form of competition, like I'm going to show you and put you down and destroy. Not that didn't happen among certain cliques in our group.
Oh, yeah. Well, we wrote towards each other, you know.
Right. And I definitely felt that missing in the last few years, and I wonder if that...
Yeah.
Wonder if that's.
I did stop writing out to Naropa.
Yeah.
I find that I do really well when I have somebody with some sort of authority telling me you must get this done by this date.
Yeah.
You must do this assignment. I do really well with that. That's why I do really well in school in general, like nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
You have this paper due. Okay, cool. Okay, I'm done.
Right.
And I've read the paper. You have to get this done. Okay. If I tell myself, you got to get this done. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know how to negotiate with yourself.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And if I have a friend telling me, oh, you need to get this done. Like, I could ask you to give me deadlines. But you don't have authority.
Oh, that's right, I don't.
No offense. But you're not a teacher. You're not my teacher. You're not my boss.
If I were an editor that was paying you, would I have authority?
Most likely.
All right. Good. now I know how to get you.
But you know, I don't know. I mean, that's just my thing. I work well with deadlines, with people telling me you need to get this done.
Right. Right.
And then I always write to impress. That's what I did in Naropa. It was like, I get, you know, Keith would give us an assignment or Bobby would give us an assignment or whoever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'm going to show, I'm not always like, I'm going to show these people. I'm like, let me try to impress somebody. I'm going to write a good story.
Right, right.
And I would sit and just write something. Well, noise turned out good, but sometimes it would. But I needed that.
Right.
I don't know, I just needed that.
But before graduate school, you wrote,
I wrote
for
all the
yourself,
time, yeah.
Right?
I did.
So
yeah.
Graduate school kind of poisoned the well in a way. What we have to do is find a
Maybe
way to
did.
Get you back to that pure state.
Yeah.
Or to find a way to straddle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that everything begins with your personal enjoyment and entertainment, and then, hey, I'll just happen to sell it.
Yeah, I see what happens. I used to enjoy writing.
Yeah.
And then I stopped enjoying it so much because I think I didn't like, if it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, or I was, you know, whatever, it just became frustrating.
Yeah, you put it into that academic, you know,
yeah,
please the authority figure model, and that, yeah, I can understand that, yeah.
I had a teacher tell me in college, you know, you'll never read a book the same way again after I'm done with you, and you're going to hate me for it.
Yeah.
And he was right. He was right, because I used to love Stephen King.
Right.
Oh, I'd love Stephen King. He was my hero. I wanted to be Stephen King.
Right.
And then I took his damn class and learned how to analyze literature. And suddenly, yeah, I was like, I read Stephen King's Bag of Bones. I'll never forget it. I picked up Bag of Bones. I was so excited. It came out September 23rd. I forget the year, but it was September 23rd. And Bag of Bones came out. And I read the first line, first paragraph. And I closed the book. And I said, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And that was that. And I think the same thing happened to me with writing.
Yeah. No, I think to a certain extent, I think I went through that too. I don't know that I went through that so much after graduate school, because I did that to myself as an undergrad. I mean, I think there was still a stretch sometime between 2001 and now where I think I lost my way in that fashion and struggled to write out of sheer enjoyment. But I, you know, on one hand, I do kind of regret, you know, learning to be critical of literature.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, the only time I regret it is when everybody's going off on some, you know, tangent, and there seems to be this, you know, this inclusive, like everybody's reading, what is it now? They're reading, the Mockingbird thing.
Hunger Games.
Hunger Games, right? Mm-hmm. You know, or when everybody was in on the Harry Potter thing, it was just like, you know, it's like, and I'm sitting there going, I wish
you could just enjoy a book.
I wish I could just enjoy it, because I know that when I pick up something and because I'm so familiar with how story is structured and put together and done, and I know I can identify those flaws, those emotional shorthands, those plot shortcuts, cliches and tropes and all this stuff. Yep. That's like, what? I can, weaknesses are so exposed,
yeah,
like that.
Well, you the know, trick is,
it takes out the easy enjoyment for me, which sucks. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's, but then again, when I do find that book where it doesn't have those flaws, when it seems to overcome those weaknesses, to challenge me in some way, to get me to actually, if it's written well enough and the writer pays enough attention to all of that stuff, that I can actually shut down that critical side.
Yeah.
Oh, motherfucker. That book's coming with me to the grave, you know?
Yeah.
Because I want to have to work to find the flaws.
Yeah.
And if I have to work to find the flaws, that's a damn good book.
Yep.
You know?
Well, I'm thinking too, it's like, sometimes you got to have a break. You got to have your junk food book. That's what I call them. Or you
True.
Just read them because they're fun to read. Like, for a while I was reading Tim Dorsey. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's hilarious.
Right, right.
Freaking hilarious. I haven't read him in years, but I got off on a, in the last 5 years or so, got off on the R.A. Salvatore kick.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy novels, but not any fantasy. It was his particular. I read, I think, in 2 years, I read 30 of his books.
Wow.
It's like, I'd just sit down and just devour them because they were just, you know, I didn't have to think. I didn't have to interact. It was just fun.
Now, here's the question I have is that, okay, even though we call them junk food books, mm-hmm. they had to have had some level of technical skill that you were able to descend into it. There, mm-hmm. the flaws were minimal enough that it didn't make you cringe.
Right. They were still good writers. They weren't.
Right.
It wasn't like, you know, the characters were still really interesting and they were still well developed and the storylines were, mm-hmm. like for R.A. Salvatore, like plot is huge with him.
Right.
And of course, for me, plot is such a mystery. So I'm always like, oh, cool. How did he come up with that? And like, he wrote these great battle scenes and stuff, which I can never dream of writing.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, my junk food book used to be, and I think you know this, the Deathlands series, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have almost, what is it? We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I've got maybe 20 books over here on my shelf that I've kept up with the series as far as purchasing them, but I've got 20 books, which is maybe 4 years worth of books as frequently as they come out with them that I haven't read yet because they've gotten so formulaic and poorly written that I can't stand them anymore. And yet I can't stop buying them because I keep thinking,
Maybe they'll change it.
Maybe they'll hire a new staff of ghostwriters for the damn thing and pick it up.
Yeah.
I think the only reason I still do that is, you know, because I've been reading them since I was 16.
Mm-hmm. It's hard habit to break.
Yeah. Whatever. But I have found, here's the thing. You know, you went off in the fantasy kick or the Tim Dorsey kick, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know who I found? Solid writer. I can slip into you know, Gardner's vivid and continuous dream. Right? With her writing. I hesitate to call it junk food because I don't want to disrespect the writer. She's a friend of mine here in Wichita. Okay. You know, but it's They're quick reads. They're very good. They're very they're solid. They're not cliched. They're not hacky.
Mm-hmm.
But it's they're romance novels. Teresa Romaine.
Oh yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah. So you know, here I am. I'm reading romance novels.
Hey.
Never thought I would read a romance novel.
You know, someone can, you know.
But I met someone who became a friend of mine who argued for the validity of the romance novel as a form and happens to write them very, very well.
Well, there you go.
So what the hell? I think people should be more open to that stuff. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, like I said, I don't think I've ever really had, I think deep down in my soul, and I think Jen Zukowski would be glad to hear this. Deep down in my soul, I've never really had a problem with genre, except when it gets formulaic.
Yeah.
When they rely on that form and you can see, okay, here's the famous quote unquote cryptologist who gets the call late at night and needs to go solve a puzzle.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan Brown, the fucker. Did you ever try to read the Da Vinci Code?
No, I never tried. I did read the last Harry Potter book.
Right.
The last one. That's
just
it.
The last one?
Just the last one.
Yeah. You know,
I did it for two reasons. One was I was curious
what
the hype was about after all those years. And two, I just really wanted to piss off my Harry Potter fan friends. Which it worked. They were furious with me.
Right.
How can you only make the last one? I did read The Hunger Games.
Uh-huh.
Those were actually very good.
Right.
I read the last two in 2 days.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I ended up reading the whole Harry Potter series.
Did you?
Yeah, before the last book came out, I just went and bought all the other ones and read them all.
Did it? Yeah.
You know, got caught up before the last one came out.
Nice.
You know,
I could tell people like them.
They were pretty well done.
Yeah.
Now, granted, as the books got more popular and they got bigger,
mm-hmm.
she could have used a stronger editor.
Yeah, they got pretty long.
You know, but she still managed to pull it all together. She pulled it off very well. You know, and there wasn't a lot of hacky, you know, weird, awful, you know, point of view stuff problems. There weren't problems with the way the, you know, focalization was handled or anything like that. They were mm-hmm. solidly done. You know, it's not quite. Did I ever tell you what my favorite sentence out of the Da Vinci Code was? Favorite sentence out of the Da Vinci Code. Okay, the scene where this happens is that this female character is going into this house, this mansion-like house, looking for something or whatever. Unbeknownst to her, there is a secret basement for this house. And that's where all the bad guys in their robes are doing this, you know, chant. She doesn't know anything about the secret basement or that they're in there. So she shows up at this house, doors wide open. She walks inside, goes to investigate the whole house. And we get this lovely two sentence start to a paragraph. And it went, "The house was entirely uninhabited, period. Upstairs, too." And I went, you've insulted my intelligence, sir.
So the house is not part of the entirety?
Yeah, the house was entirely uninhabited. Yeah, I got it. Upstairs. Yeah. Really?
Just you got that. There was an upstairs, and that was part of the house. Yeah,
upstairs, too. I would have assumed. You said entirely, but you forgot the secret basement. Right?
But I can't tell you about that.
The house was entirely uninhabited, period. Upstairs, too. Couple paragraphs later, you find out about the secret basement. So technically, the house was not upstairs entirely uninhabited.
The edit, maybe the house appeared uninhabited.
But you didn't even
upstairs
then,
too.
Upstairs too. You could have still done in your little, you know, backup. You know, I don't trust the reader to get what the word entirely means.
Yeah, that's funny.
Oh
my God.
That was the point where
I never read it.
That was the point where I took the book and I threw it as hard as I could at the floor. I was in my then girlfriend's house, so I didn't want to throw it out the window because the window was closed. I didn't want to pull a Gavin, you know, and throw it out the open sliding glass door onto the yard.
Yep.
I would have loved to have done that though. It deserved it.
How funny.
Right.
I remember that's how you destroy a book once. That was pretty funny.
What was that?
Remember that one?
No, I don't.
Ethan Hawke's book.
Oh, really?
You did.
Which
you were so angry at it. Like, they had a book come out that was so bad, and you were like,
"Was that Ash Wednesday?"
Like, I think so. And you ripped the cover off and you just ripped it to shreds right in the apartment.
I don't remember doing that at all.
Yeah, it was so funny. Yeah.
And
it was funny.
I had that book. When did I? Wow.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're not hallucinating? You didn't imagine
so.
That.
I pretty much remember that. So I think you got your red pen out of you know, and we're like circling stuff and everything. That was hilarious. That's how my memory works. But you know,
Okay.
It's been a long time. That's what I remember. But...
I don't remember that, but it's not an unreasonable.
Yeah.
it's not unreasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done some pretty... Yeah, well, you know, I've done some things that, you know, that I've been ashamed of and have over the years, you know, forcibly, you know, amnesia'd myself into.
Yeah, that was pretty funny, though. You should remember it. Yeah. Well, maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but. I just remember you were standing in front of the bookcase in that apartment we shared on Iris, or on 30th and wherever the street was.
Yeah, yeah, where the Lazy Dog used to be.
Yeah. And you were standing right there by the patio, and just, I was there with, we had some people over, or somebody was over. It wasn't just me. And you ripped the book up. It was hilarious. It insulted you so much.
Well, you know, if you can't be passionate about literature, then literature's not something you should be involved in. I mean, you got to be passionate about something. I happen to be passionate about
exactly. Nothing wrong with it. It's just funny.
I just wish I had been there. You know, when Gavin threw that copy of Independence Day out of I think it was Tom Morgan's apartment.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, and then about a month later, Tom found his copy of that book in the bin at Trident for sale.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You didn't hear that part of the story?
No, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, Gavin, we'd all been out drinking. Gavin and Tom and, you know, the other guys went back to Tom's place. I think you and I might have been with him at some point, but we, you know, buggered off somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the story was that Gavin, you know, found Independence Day on the bookshelf in there and threw it out off the balcony onto the yard, you know, which is what you should do with the Richard Ford book, I hear. But and the next morning, Tom went out to get his book back and it was gone. Someone had made off with Independence Day sometime during the night. And a couple months later, he was walking down Pearl Street, you know, stopped by the Trident bookstore and was looking through the used books out in their bin out in front of the store. And I guess he had put his name in it, or there was some other identifying mark inside the book, you know, and he found Independence on the shelf, and he opened it up, and there was his little mark or his name in it.
Oh, God.
whoever had picked it up off the lawn thought, oh, this will be good to read, got rid of it real quick.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, no. Well,
yeah. That's kind of, fuck it. I think that's why I want these salons that I'm doing to work out. It's like I don't expect anyone to throw any of my books out my window, but it would be damn fun if someone would.
Yeah.
You know, not just to amuse me, but out of a legitimate, you know, outrage at the quality of the literature on my shelf. How can you like Hemingway? The fucking, you know, just you know.
Yeah.
It's not like you can't replace a Hemingway book. They're always in print, you know.
They're always around, yeah.
Just don't throw one of my signed copies out there of anybody.
Oh, God. I don't know if I can find copies. When Andache came to speak at CC in Colorado Springs, I went with a friend of mine, and I got up and asked him a question about narrative, and I was shaking so bad. And I went up to get my book signed. I had a stack. He looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, I'm really sorry. Can you sign all these books? And he signed. He's like, oh, sure. And he signed them all.
Yeah, I remember that because we swapped copies of The English Patient after that.
Yep.
That's how I got my signed copy of The English Patient.
Yep. Yeah, he signed every fucking book that he ever wrote.
Yeah. And my sister got a copy of The Cat's Table signed for me when Andache read in New York. She went to the event
and
picked up a copy for me and got him to sign it. I'd love to meet him in person, but I don't think he's ever going to come through Kansas.
Probably not.
Um,
he hasn't been anywhere recently, I don't think, for Canada.
Yeah, you know, he did a small tour for Cat's Table, and
yeah. I remember. God, that was so cool. I got to ask him a question about how he writes narratives. Like, this is the coolest thing in my life. That was like the highlight of everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember if I told him I was writing my thesis on him or not. I might have when I gave my books. I don't remember. I blanked it out, but I'm so nervous.
Nervous and don't want to remember embarrassing yourself. I mean, if you embarrass yourself, you better forget it.
Yeah, exactly. Good grief.
All right. Well, don't go anywhere. It was good talking to you. Say goodbye to everybody on the podcast.
Oh, goodbye.
And I'm still kind of on hiatus. This is just the only thing I'm doing during the hiatus. We'll get back to new interviews in November, but we'll keep up with the shop talks. Hopefully, there won't be any other tragedies. So you and I'll be back in a month for this one, for another one in November.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
All right. All right. There you have it. Another shop talk with Laura Holly. I hope you enjoyed it. And in a couple of weeks, we'll have we'll reissue an earlier conversation. I'm thinking, we'll see. I'll surprise you. Take something out of the vault. Might do something fun. Who knows what we'll do. But, of course, don't worry. In November, we'll be back with new interviews. So, see you in a couple weeks.